Welcome back to the Next Gen Sales Leader Podcast. This is the second ever school group recording for our Next Gen Sales Leaders community. We have weekly office hours every Thursday at 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, and this is the second one we ever did. So you get to actually listen into my community members' questions on how they're scaling their B2B businesses, what problems they're facing, and how we have suggested they overcome these challenges. We're going to talk about everything from unit economics, making sure you're profitably scaling your B2B offer, how to make sure that your team is hired correctly to make sure you have the right people, how to train them and manage them, how to use systems and playbooks to support their growth so you don't have to repeat yourself every single time you want to train them, and more. You even get to actually meet my team internally at Next Gen Sales Leaders, how we build a positive culture and how you encourage them to stay with you long-term as an entrepreneur. Building a great team is the foundation of every single entrepreneur's dreams. Now, if you haven't joined the school community, it's free. There's no reason not to. You get a free classroom of all my tactics, strategies, and methods for scaling B2B businesses. There is a link below somewhere in the description. So go ahead and join. You'll see a community of like-minded founders, people to network with. You can get direct access to me, and you can talk to me every single week on Thursday. Otherwise, let's jump into this office hours. I'll see you guys in there.
Primary goal of this call for me was to solve entrepreneurial loneliness, which is a weird thing to say, but I think that there's just not enough places for people to come and just shoot the shit and talk. But it's also to tactically and strategically answer kind of key questions people have. So again, this is the second time we've ever done this. So if it seems like I'm winging it, it's because I am. And we're just going to rock and roll. So does anyone have any particular questions or thoughts or concerns or worries? Looks like we just joined. What's up, Louis?
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
Good to see you. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, no, anytime.
So does anyone have any questions that they wanted to jump into or any subjects they wanted to broach? I mean, it doesn't have to be a question either. It could be like, I want to just talk about this subject, and we could all just throw our hats in the ring. It doesn't also have to be me answering questions. It could be us all just debating about a subject. Or so happy to start where everyone wants to start.
I mean, after last week, you've got me on this like systems train, just really diving in and out each one of the processes of my business. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's been easier to do on the sales side, probably because more of my experience lies on that side. But when it comes to development, particularly because we introduced some new things like AI voice and stuff like that, mm-hmm. I'm kind of running into some roadblocks, especially when it comes to like hiring. Development. So, when it comes to hiring, stuff like that, because now I'm wondering, should it be someone that has more like people skills, like a client success manager, or someone that's got the tech skills, and then I train them up on the client success side? Like, I don't really know how to prioritize that.
So walk me through. So just before I answer anything, so you're trying to build out playbooks or sales operating, standard operating procedures, training, or the development side, or are you just you're thinking about who do I hire as a starting point before I do those?
Sort of both. Mm-hmm. So I've already got playbooks ready for the sales side. Like, I've hired people on that. And then now that I've been having more sales calls and assumably more clients starting mm-hmm. up next week, mm-hmm. I'm already foreseeing the bottleneck of me still being involved on like too many fronts. Mm-hmm. So I want to just make sure I have the playbooks in place for the development side to be able to have them seamlessly come in. And then it's kind of like just connecting on what worked versus what didn't, instead of like a full on like intensive me training them on what I'm doing mm-hmm. or them kind of shadowing. So I guess
I understand where you're at. So yeah. So just for background, I founded a number of SaaS DaaS companies. I may have said that last time, but I've also been the first product person at most of the companies. So I was the person who had to make the first tech hire. I had to envision the first product roadmap, wireframes, the entire from scratch, like the entire concept of a product, and then build that into Figma files and then actually get someone to carry out the full development of it. So I'm pretty familiar with this world. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're building, technically speaking?
Yeah. So originally it was just meant to be the voice AI and whole lead nurturing system. So it's retail because it's got HIPAA. It's HIPAA compliant because we're working with MedSpas. in the US. So everything has to be HIPAA compliant. So the system starts with retail, voice AI, it integrates with Go High Level, the HIPAA package, and then just nurtures those leads to make sure they actually show up to the appointments that are booked over the phone. Mm-hmm. And then also upsells past clients on future packages, services, automates the responses to reviews, that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. But what I've been finding on sales calls is that a lot of the smaller businesses that we're working with also need the lead gen side. So also managing the meta ads for them as well. Probably going to work in some sort of AI feature on that front too, just to streamline the creative process. But yeah, that's the gist of it. Lead nurturing and lead gen.
So now from a development standpoint, are these people, maybe I'm missing something, are they specifically integration specialists, or are you building an actual app?
Integration specialists. The difference comes in the level of integration. So mm-hmm. one med spa might have more medical directors. You have to rotate the calendars depending on what service is being requested mm-hmm. Compared to another med spa, or the CRMs that we're integrating with are slightly different from med spa to med spa. Mm-hmm. So that's where the variance comes from.
And when we're talking about developers, are they actually like writing Python and creating APIs, or is it just like, is it literally just more like low code, kind of no code type of integrations?
Yeah, so we use NADN and it's our own private servers. So it's all low code, no code, mm-hmm. As far as that goes.
Okay, so that helps me a lot because the answer completely depends. Mm-hmm. So so internally, Alan here is our actual NAN guy, low code, no code kind of guy here. And Jesse is my head of customer success. And so he does all of the process side stuff just from like strategy perspective. So they can speak to that to a degree. But I would say my answer, and I'll let them chime in here, is that you don't have it's not nearly as complex as what I'm typically used to, where it's like there's actually like a deep understanding of the ideal customer profile that has to occur and all that kind of stuff that actually would inform an actual product development cycle. Whereas you, it's much more about like, do you understand the process flow that needs to occur around the data and the systems being involved? So for me, the backbone of what you're doing is going to be Jesus Christ. What's the tool we use for workflows, guys? Lucidchart. Jesus Christ. It would be Lucidchart diagrams. So for me, for any type of like technical workflow or integrations or algorithmic kind of like if this happens, that happens type of stuff, I use Lucidchart. And for me, I would come up with a flow diagram for every use case that you've experienced thus far, and also which ones that you want to work on. And I would then create documentation explaining it. So I would actually do the Lucidchart. I would do a screen share video recording using Descript, and I would actually just walk people through it as long as you think it's going to be repeated. Now, that's kind of an entry point just for people to get a sense of like what you're doing and why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Now, if I was using NAN, for example, I would also, and if the NAN was a repeated constant process where it's like, okay, here's the template that we use, and this is how you duplicate it, and here's the mod nodule, and you have to like do all these things, I would just do a full walkthrough of every typical setup that you go through. And I would separate them, I would do the strategic kind of step process first in Lucidchart, and then I would do a walkthrough video on how to use it, how to set it up tactically in NAN, and I would discuss use cases. So I'd probably do one of those videos each for each process diagram that I came up with. And then I'd put that in a Notion. And I would just have like a master Notion doc that just said like use cases. And it would just be like, this is the med spa that has this, like whatever, like come up with a name of each use case. And in within each page of a Notion doc, I would then have like high level overview of the process. Here's the tactical setup of NAN. And I would just start building a library of those. And then when you bring on a new person, you just hand them that doc and you say, I need you to work on use case 3 and before, start there. And then I, what I would do is internally, I would have a test. So what I do is my rule is very clear documentation, use the 4C playbook I sent. You have that, right?
Yeah.
So I would create the, I would do all this, record, because that's part of the 4Cs. One is camcorder, so record. And again, that's Dan Martell's term. I'm not stealing from him. I'm just using it. And then from there, I would create the playbooks in each one, and I would have a test that I would create internally. I wouldn't share with people. And I would actually have a typically on my side of what we call a sales support person, or just a VA, executive assistant, whoever you want to call them. And you train them on testing the new people. And so what I do is I would put them through a test. Yeah, I might even make them go through the training beforehand. So on the sales side over here, we have something called the 3-day challenge, where we create, you know, the, it's literally 3 days of all my content, 100 lessons, and they have to learn it. And then they have to test out of it before they even get hired. Now, I give them a day rate for 3 days of learning and testing. And then if I think they suck, or if they just don't pass the test, then I've saved myself a lot of bullshit giving them a responsibility they were never qualified to have. So I did the same thing here. I would come up with your playbooks, and I would make them learn it. I'd pay them, like, depends on how long you think it's going to take, but let's say it only takes 4 hours, pay them an hourly rate for 4 hours, and then test them on that and say, if you pass this test, I'll give you a project. And then I would test them on one project, one use case with one client. And if they pass that, then we would move forward. That's what happened with Alan, is that Alan, I hired Alan. I said, hey, we have a use case. I don't think I tested Alan, but we did have a use case, and I said, hey, why don't you come in and try this one thing? And he did really well, and we gave him another one, and now he takes on a lot of our clients. So it's the same idea here, is that, do you get what I'm saying, or is there any questions there?
No, I mean, it all makes much sense. So
is it helpful? Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah. And then the only thing, I guess there's a couple of things I'm missing there. Would that be two different people then, like the client success manager and the developer?
It depends on how complex it is. In our world, I mean, we have a very similar situation here, because we have this tremendously complex weekly campaign setup, which there's like a 50-point checklist that have to be done perfectly to have people succeed. Because if you screw up one part of the checklist for the, this is for the generation cold outbound email that we do, you screw one thing up, the whole campaign can go down. And so we're like NASA. Like, it's like, you do not even launch unless this checklist is checked. And so we have extremely detailed processes around that. And we like to have redundancy over here. There's also this idea, this is more of like a high level business leader kind of thought process, not so much a tactical operator thought process, which is like, I don't want key man risk in my business. And the problem is that, like, and by the way, key man risk is like when you have one person or one client that controls a lot of something, and if they disappear, you are fucked. And so the problem with anybody who has a team of less than five people, you always have key man risk. It's like unavoidable. So it's like, okay, well, you don't want key man risk. You're a startup. Too bad, too sad. That's just reality. That being said, if I can build into the business model two people, so that if somebody leaves, the other person can fill in. So like at any moment, somebody could get sick, somebody has to, you know, a family member dies, you know, whatever, something that can happen. You need somebody who can step in and cover for you. Otherwise, you as the business owner end up doing that. So for me, I don't like that risk. The other thing is that beyond the obvious, like somebody could just leave and now you're stuck with all this responsibility. It's just also more sellable in the long term. Like if you didn't want to sell this, or it creates a world where it's just a more stable business overall. Now the problem, the counter to what I'm saying is that there's a unit economics risk. And so the more bodies you add to a client, the more cost it is to fulfill for that client. So that's why I really recommend never pay people hourly on a project, because they're incentivized to bill hours, not to actually fulfill the work at a high quality within a constraint. So for me, I would rather pay a per client per month fee. So where it's like, okay, let's say that you're charging $5,000 a month to the client. And let's say you're paying hourly, you know, two people, customer success person and an engineer on the project. Well, then you know, I your unit economics scope might go from like a 2-to-1 to a like 1.1-to-1. You know, it's like you could literally fuck yourself on a single client just because you're a growth engineer. Like if Alan just decides to go like geek out on some type of thing, spends 4 hours researching something, but I'm billing that to myself and I'm now losing margin. So for me, I would rather just say, okay, hey, Alan, you know, you get X dollars per month per client you work on, and this incentivizes you to move quickly, but also keep the client. Same thing with Jesse. Is like I have him on a flat monthly salary that allows us to work out unit economics well. So the answer is that you can have both. There's risks to having both because unit economics, but there's also risks to not having both because you have key man risk. So you just have to know which one you want.
And then I know we talked about pricing services last time. How would you like appropriately pay like a developer or client success manager as a startup?
How much would you pay?
Like, or how do you come up with pricing to like
to pay them
as the skills, but not get the agency in a hole?
Yeah, so again, this is unit economics. So you have to model out what, and put this into a big spreadsheet. And do you want me to show you my unit economics?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Okay. I'll show you. Nobody ever showed this, but I will show you because I'm a crazy person. This is a way of thinking about it.
You've got me thinking numbers last week. Like, I'm traditionally not a numbers guy. So I've just been like systematizing, processing everything, and then projecting numbers like I've never done before. So that was like the hugest takeaway from
last That's week. Great. All right, I'm going to share my screen. I'm just going to show you like where these break. And because I think this is helpful for anybody who's listening to this just as a business operator. And this is more agency focused. And service-based focus, but it's still kind of interesting. And it also shows why this part of the business isn't like a cash cow. This is not where we get most of our margins from. Can you see this?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is like, I mean, this gives you the complexity at play here. But what I'm trying to understand is like what my gross margins are, what my operating profit is, et cetera, et cetera. And I even came up with a benchmark of like where you actually want to be.
Mm.
And you can see my gross margin actually kind of sucks. It's low. And my operating profit, though, isn't bad. It's actually kind of relatively high. So you'll see here, this is on a model. This isn't actually my cash flow. This is just a model of if I was to sell 10 clients, what are the unit economics on a 10 client? So then you can scale this and say, okay, like, let's say I have 300 clients. It tells you kind of how it scales on a unit basis. So this isn't my actual revenue, to be clear. Now, that being said, what I've done here to work this out is like, okay, like what is, for me, I'm actually calculating both my growth engineer cost here, which is total GM standard comp, total GM annual comp, and then the retention bonus. And growth manager is customer success in my world. There's salesperson commission, plus there is growth engineer cost. And again, assuming a 10 client model. It's actually less than this now, but just so you know, that's like the idea is that there's these different people's salaries that I have to pay. And I'm not taking any money. So I would be the chief operating officer in this scenario, but I'm not taking money in this model. So you can build in your own salary if you want to. And then I have additional costs like on a unit basis, like software and a bunch of other stuff, which goes into like cost of goods sold and other stuff around stuff. So the point I'm trying to make is that like I then break this down. You're not going to be able to understand this with that in this short amount of time, but I'm trying to give you like a sneak peek into what you should be considering. Yeah. But if I look at this, like on the high end, I'm paying about $50 an hour on a growth engineer. On the low end, I'm paying $30 an hour. Okay. So this is like $30 an hour for the type, and this is actually, I think, a pretty good proxy for you because we're talking about low code engineers. I think the market here is like around this rate. If you go above $50 per hour, you're just dealing with a guy who's just trying to gut you, in my opinion. He's going and then finding somebody at this rate or lower, and he's reselling, in my opinion. or he better be offering some really deep strategic services. But I think like on Upwork, you should be in this range. I think like a fair rate for somebody in Pakistan is probably in the 25 to 30 range, maybe 20 to 30 range on the low end. A really good guy from Pakistan, I'd pay like 30, 35. And I probably wouldn't pay above that for Pakistan, which is where a lot of these guys live. And then on the, I wouldn't work with the Filipinos on this. I haven't seen any good Filipinos on the low code side. I think they're better on the virtual assistant side. I'm making categorical, like sweeping statements here, but I'm just saying like this has been my experience. And I also wouldn't go with any of the Indian low code guys on Upwork because I found that they are not reliable. Again, that sounds horrible to say that, but like categorically, that's been my experience. Whereas I find that like if you're going to work with the Pakistanis, they seem to be pretty good. And then I would go with an American or like a European type person at this rate or lower. If you're giving them a shit ton of work, I would go lower than this. I'd be in the more $40 range. So that gives you kind of a kind of a rate there. Now, with that being said, like you can see here, you know, there's this tells me on the basis of this price, it tells you like my cost of goods sold, which is essentially just and this is really isolating specifically salary, and it doesn't include commissions or software costs or anything else. This is I'm essentially spending of the money we received, the 8,500, about 35% of that money goes to the team, and the rest is margin to pay for the other parts of the business. But you can see my operating margin, my operating profit isn't anywhere near that because I have many other costs that aren't associated with the client work. So you have to build this model out. You have to like think about this for yourself. But if you don't see, like if you're not getting any profit, then when you scale, then it's like, why are you doing this business? But this is a pretty good like benchmark of where you want to be on an agency service basis from an operating profit level, revenue per employee, gross margins, et cetera. So I'm kind of average on my revenue per employee. My operating profit is, you know, kind of in this higher end range, and my gross margin isn't great right now, but that's because of the scale. This is only on a 10 client analysis. But if I did 40 client analysis, this margin gets a bunch better. So you have to take that in account. But if you don't know what these mean, then I highly recommend just rewatching this video because I'll record this and just go to ChatGPT and say, how do you like calculate gross margin? How do you calculate operating profit and all that other stuff? But if you haven't figured this out, and you try to scale, you're just waiting to just lose your mind because you'll be making $1 million a year and you're not making any money.
I ran into that in the last agency I was in full time. So yeah, I'm already just trying to avoid all the mistakes that we made as a slightly bigger team before.
Well, I'll actually show you one other thing related to that, which is why am I paying charging $8,500 a month for lead gen? Because this isn't like my other services that I offer. This has nothing to do with like my systems or my processes, which are actually more than this. And the reason I have to charge 8,500 is watch what happens if I go to 5,000. And like the whole fucking model just like collapses. All of a sudden, it's like I'm not making any money on this. Where's my cash here? Annual revenue. So it's like my annual revenue just gets gutted, right? And my margins collapse. And so if I'm at 8,500, all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's not great, but it's like it's passable, you know? So I'm doing 680,000 in revenue, but I'm only taking out in an operating profit of 177,000. So again, if my agency was only 10 clients in this scenario, I'd make personally a profit of 177,000 without paying myself a salary. So this is essentially like the take home I would get. You know, in my world, I'm like, I would rather just go as a chief revenue officer. Like some of my fractional clients pay me, you know, close to $15,000 commission, like without considering profit share commission per month. So why would I run this business if that's all I'm going to make? You know what I mean? I would just take on two or three of those additional clients and just be happy with it. So for me, like the only reason that we would do this business is because, again, I have a whole system I can scale and I could make multiples of this profit. if I have good systems in place. And then it starts to be interesting. And what this is actually like, the reason we even do this is because a front end sale into my other offers, which are not as sexy, but actually really critical. So everyone wants lead generation. Lead generation is the hardest thing to do, and we'll do it for people. But what people actually really need is better sales systems and better post, what we call post lead capture sales systems. So what we do is we come and deploy the entire operations process for sales. But that's my back end offer typically. And typically I track people with my lead gen offer. And so I do it because, you know, I won't make a lot of money here, but I'll make a lot more money because there's a lot more margin on the other part of the business, which is actually more valuable, but it's easier to deliver for me because there's not constant like weekly moving part. So yeah. You got to just ask yourself as you're scaling this business, like, do I really want to make this offer? And if so, you know, like why, you know, what's in it for me?
Okay. And even with a growth operator or growth manager, you were showing hourly rates, but initially you said to bill per project. Would you do what we were talking about last week, where you would project the amount of hours, multiply that by that hourly rate?
But what I did though, if you look closely at the model, I'll show you again. What I did closely on the model was it's an expected hours for a single campaign. So it's a fixed cost.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I'm just taking what I know, because remember, people don't think in terms of fixed costs on Upwork, where you'll find these people. And so you got to translate that into an expected amount of time per project. But you then have to convey this to them and say, like, look, I need my costs to be fixed. Otherwise, I'm screwed. And then you also have to make the project repeatable enough and systematized enough to where they feel comfortable working within that. Otherwise, if like they don't have trust in you that you're going to like blow out the scope, and now they've agreed to a fixed cost on something that actually takes three times as long, they're getting gutted on the hourly.
Yeah.
So you got it. So it's up to you to make a very standardized, systematized way and make them feel comfortable that they can work within those boundaries and still deliver, but also make money on their side. And so it's kind of it's a balancing act, but this is another reason why you definitely need to have a really good set of systems and standard operating procedures. And you have to think about this model before you start to scale, because otherwise you might be scaling into disaster. So I know this sounds complex. It's really not. Like, it's very basic shit when you just take ChatGPT and literally just say, like, hey, I need to build out a profit and loss model for my business and bake in certain key inputs. I have this type of person, this type of person, this type of person. This is my average price. This is my lifetime value on those people. Here's my other costs. And just put it in ChatGPT and have it work out a model for you. And then throw it into a Google Sheet and then just start tinkering with it. Now, if you suck at Google Sheets, then in this scenario, I would hire an Upwork person, and I just hire somebody who's like good at like financial analysis for like $100 an hour for like 2 to 3 hours to like work through it. It's worth the $300. Because you might find that your model is fucked. And so why would you want to scale that and build that up if you aren't making money?
No, that makes sense. Would you say it's too soon to try to find someone that's like part of the team? Like, just look for a freelancer?
If you don't have the work for them, it's too soon.
Yeah. Even if it's part-time?
So what we did with Alan was Alan came on a single project basis. And then as we got more work for him, we started scaling him up. So my suggestion is just come on up with a flat rate. Maybe I start hourly typically, just to see what it's like with the person. And if you like working with them, then negotiate a rate that actually makes sense so you can scale a unit economically. And then just keep on adding projects until they're full time.
Okay.
You know, and then it's like, typically you're not going to find, so I would not hire a full-time position like this, because one, there's too much risk. You don't know what it's like working with them. Two is you probably don't have enough work for them anyways. So that's my take, is I would go on Upwork, I'd put up a GTM type of like low code kind of integrator guy. And I would try him out on a project basis and then go from there.
Cool. No, everything you're saying makes sense. None of it seemed too crazy. So it's just a matter.
It's literally what I do. I mean, I'm not just saying this shit. This is like literally my life. So.
Well, you are making me reevaluate, because I think I told you MedSpas is like a newer niche to target for us. So like I admittedly have gone down on pricing. I think I told you that last week too. So it might even be too soon to bring on developers. Like maybe I should freeze after locking down these three projected clients and then wait until I'm charging more. Because that's something.
So what I do in this, and this is what I have, is I go interview everybody ahead. I make them an offer on Upwork. I actually send them the proposal. So they're hired technically on Upwork at the rate. So it's pretty good rate. And I tell them, I tell them they're hired, but I don't have work for them yet. And that's like a like that's a way to like have basically like ammo in the background. Whereas like when you scale up quickly, you can basically be like, hey, I know I said I'd hire you. And we finally have a project for you. Can you be ready in 3 days? And they typically will be ready. So I would rather like pre-negotiate three or four of these guys beforehand. And then when you scale up, you have them ready to go. That's what I would do.
Okay.
That's what I do.
Tons of sense. And then this might be a silly question that might be a non-issue, but I feel like with the smaller clients that we are able to get on the phone and then convert, lately, just because our brand isn't established, like we are offering things like lead gen, but these type of clients might not necessarily be in our ICP somewhere in the future where maybe we are just doing lead nurturing. So is there any way to communicate that with past clients, or is it you're just locked into doing lead gen for the foreseeable?
Well, you're never locked in. I mean, it's always a negotiation. I mean, so for me, like, how do I describe this? Any good business is always trying to find the next best offer that they can make that makes more sense for them. If you're not, you're going to be disrupted at some point. So now, look, if you have an offer that's scaling, it's crushing, then yeah, just keep on scaling and crushing. But if you're at the stage you're at, you don't know what that offer looks like and you haven't gotten your operating systems bound down. I would say that, like, I really like the adage of more, better, new. It's like a framework, more, better, new. And more, better, new kind of goes like this. Keep doing more of what you're doing and then do better of it and then do more of it and then do better of it and very rarely do new. Because new is always a steep learning curve and you have to go through a bunch of crazy shit that you can't even begin to know what's going to happen. And so there's big risk. So it's better to stay with the known issue and the known variables and just continue down that path, but just like, you know, kind of tweaking here and there. So for example, for us internally, it's like we started at $5,000. Actually, we started at $3,500 a month on the lead gen. And I'm like, I'm not making any money here. And I was like, we got to go to 5,000. And then I was like, man, but I'm really just overwhelmed with one person doing all the work and they're just not doing a great job. Nobody on this call, but like, I'm just saying in general, like, and I was like, we need to have two people so that there's redundancy and in case somebody leaves. Then I added that, but I'm like, oh shit, that just killed the unit economics. I need to raise prices. So it was like a constant iteration. And then I also made the same mistake that you've made, which is I taken on the wrong clients. So like we realized, okay, we're working with clients we shouldn't be working with. Well, you have to fire the client. So then you go to them and you say, hey, like, you know, I know we're working together. This is going to be my last full month working with you. I really appreciate you and everything. But, you know, we're scaling in a different direction. And it's no longer a good fit for us to offer these services. And that's the end of the conversation. And then you should have built your contract, like a 30-day notice to cancel or something, or some type of like clear escape path. And then you just give them the notice and you cancel. But it's very, very important that you do not take on people that are not a good fit, because you will not deliver for them. They will find out and you will hurt your reputation and you're going to lose your mind in the process.
Yeah, no, and it's not, it's just ads. Like I've been doing ads for years now too. It's just, especially this conversation has really got me thinking, like, it's going to be hard to find, or not even that I want to find this person that's good at running ads, building no-code systems, and potentially like being client-facing. Like those would assume.
Yeah, really, that's not gonna happen. Yeah. Like, because if they could do that, and they were able to do that, they would just do that themselves, you know. So you have to ask yourself, like, why are people working with you. It's because they want to probably improve their skill set, and they want to improve their career, and they want to learn from you, and they have a lifestyle that's different than you. Like for me, I'm a crazy person. I work 80-hour work weeks, and I'm an entrepreneur, and I work Saturdays and Sundays, and I don't have a life. And maybe they don't want that, right? And so if that's the case, then it's like, okay, they're just as capable as you, intellectually, but they're not as driven as you. And so you got to understand like what's driving people when they join your team. But like generally speaking, like if they can do all of those things, they're probably charging a lot more money. And so anyways, that person doesn't exist unless, and if they do, they're probably not working with you. Now I think the hardest part of entrepreneurship is not the tactical stuff like pushing ads and, you know, writing code, and doing process. It's actually the strategic part of like, why am I doing this? And like, what is the current flow of the things? You know, even internally every day we have discussions of like, is that the right process, or what document should we have here? Or like, what more information do we have that would help this process go better? Those like process building strategic, like methods of like, how do you do things, is a strategic question a lot of the time, or even that, should I even be doing this activity to begin with, is a strategic question. That's where the big bucks come from. So why does somebody pay me $15,000 a month versus somebody who's doing 10 times the amount of actual like hourly work? So I might have a salesperson who's making say 100K per year at a company working full time, like 50, 60 hour work weeks. But I work 5 hours a week and I make 50% more money. Why is that? It's because I am with a single decision and impacting millions of dollars of revenue, whereas their single decision might be a deal here or there at an average order value of $20,000, you know? So you have to look at like, why are people working for you? Why are why are they paid what they're paid? And so if somebody has all of that skill and experience, they're probably, that's a very weird set of skills to have and not be doing something at a higher level. And if they say they have those skills and they're still doing them, I'm wondering why. Like, I'm like, why are you, you're a professional. I'm making the assumption they're good, right? Mm-hmm. If they're like good at media buying and they're good at low code stuff and they're good at funnel creation and they're good at all this stuff, I know there's something kind of off, because I can say like, I'm pretty good at funnel creation. I'm pretty good at graphic design. I'm pretty good at media buying. I've learned all those skill sets myself, but I would not say I'm an expert at any of them. I would say like, I'm strategically an expert, but tactically I'm not. Like if you put me in NAN, I will fumble around there for the next several hours and I will get you something. But I'd much rather have Alan, who is an expert in NAN, go do that, you know? So it doesn't make sense to, anyways, I think you should look for specialists. I think it makes a lot more sense. And yeah.
You're just dropping gold left and right, because I was always picturing.
But they pay me the big bucks.
Because I was imagining like I need to, like I wish I could clone myself. But then when you put it that way, it's like, look at me, like but like running my own business, like if I had another version of me, he would be doing the same thing. Yeah. So like, wouldn't be the person I would be looking to hire right now. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ideal hire, I mean, like, again, I keep using Alan as like the ideal hire, because Alan is like, do you mind if I talk about Joe?
Okay. Go ahead.
So Alan's 24, you know, he's kind of in the early part of his career, obviously, smart guy. Capable, I'm sure he could go try his own startup right now if he wanted to. He'd probably get crushed, no offense, Alan, just because it's that hard and he doesn't have the capital required. But he could. I mean, that's one way to learn. Another way to learn is like, get on the same ship as me. I've done it 13 times, learn from me for 4 to 5 years, you know, get paid well to do it. And then go try with the help of someone like me or a bigger network, what you've done. So the ideal hire is to find somebody who's like 10, 15 years before you, who wants to know your skill set or wants to like learn from you. And they have a big ambition, a big drive. In this way, like their vision and your vision are actually the same vision, right? Because it's entrepreneurial success. Same thing with Jesse. Like Jesse is like a really smart guy, right? He's been a president of companies before, right? And so for him, he's just not like in an entrepreneurial mode right now. He wants to have a more secure life in terms of just like making the cash and just paying for his, you know, his life, his home and his significant others. And that's okay. He's not in the like, I'm going to go invest $300,000 into building this crazy app. But he can still come on the fun ride with somebody who's doing it. And in the future, if he wants to go start his own company, and I would support him, you know, if we work well together, you know? So I think like the key thing to company building is looking for alignment. It's just fundamentally what it is. It's like, does their vision and their needs in life align with yours? Because if they don't, then the incentive is all fucked. So if you have a guy who's like, oh, I just want to go do this for 2 months and then I'm just going to spin off, then it's like, why are we working together? It's a waste of my time. I'm just giving the guy like some short term like peek into my world. But then it screws me because then I'm like in a situation where I just invested all this time to train somebody who is gone. So I would say, generally speaking, if you don't think a person's going to stay for at least 12 months, don't work with them. That's generally my rule, because it takes 3 months to even get somebody functioning really well. It takes another 6 months to like see real benefits. And it takes like, I think, 12 months to really build trust. I have a rule of like, I don't truly trust somebody for the first year. Like, I trust them, but I don't like truly trust them. You know, like somebody who's like, you leave them alone with their babies kind of thing, you know? So that's kind of how I look at it, is like, it's like kind of Warren Buffett of hiring, which is find people that you will invest with over the long run. You don't hire somebody if you don't want to work with somebody in 5 years from now. Don't hire them if you don't want to work with them in 80 years from now. Like, you know, when I'm 100 years old, if I didn't want to work with that person, I shouldn't hire them today. So that's the framework. And then you also have to ask yourself, does this person want to work with me that long? You know, and so I want to make it an environment here for Alan and Jesse where they see the benefit of continuing to work with me, whether it's partnering with me, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. I want to build an environment, or maybe they want me to be an investor in their future business. So that's kind of the mindset I have when I'm hiring people. And then also, once you build a team, I've done this many times, scaled teams up to 25 people. Once you build a team, nobody gets on the team unless everybody 100% agrees they should be on the team. Because what I have found is that they're oftentimes better at me judging people than I am. So I have one perspective, then I'll ask, hey, Jesse, should we bring, like when we hired Alan, I said, hey, Jesse, should we bring Alan? And then there was but if Jesse had said no to Alan, Alan wouldn't be sitting here, even if I really liked Alan, which I did. So, and the same thing, if we bring on another person on this particular pod, then we would, pods are, by the way, like growth engineers and growth managers. And so if we add in somebody else to that, they would have a full control over whether that happened. I would say, hey, I'm thinking about this guy. What do you think? Or girl or woman, whatever. I don't want to go into the gender thing, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it's like, whoever it is, they, them, whatever. The point is, it's like, they have to completely be aligned on that person or spirit animal, whatever it is. Does that make sense? I'm so like not politically correct. It's not my avatar, man. Like, if you're super politically correct, I probably wouldn't want to work with you anyways. So I don't give a shit.
No, okay. I was just something that's like, if you always look straight at the note taker in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, that's funny. Like, the note taker was like violating basic ethics, you know, basic, like, yeah. But I mean, like, that's just the truth. Man, I hope some of the clients don't watch this. but I'm kind of kidding. I don't think it was that big deal. So what other questions does anyone else have? Do you have, Bruna, do you want to ask questions? Or are you good? Are you just hanging in for the ride?
Yeah, I'm just listening, just learning. Learn something new from you every time. So I really appreciate everything you share. You have so much knowledge. I was just about to text you that I need to leave because I got to prepare for a demo. So okay. I want to review the lead before jumping on a call. Okay. But I'll be here next week and I'll have my questions prepared next time.
All right. See ya.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye. So yeah, Louie, why don't we ask one more question and then we'll wrap it up since nobody else is here.
Yeah. I guess Most useful question in the time would be more med spa related or specific, because I know you said you had worked out extensively in that niche. So something I've been running into, like, I don't know if it's like they don't know our brand well enough or what, but the only real traction we get is targeting the smaller med spas that, yeah, I mean, it's tougher to price at the price point that I know we should be. Like, you even told me we need to be doubling or
Yeah,
tripling.
it's weird. I mean, so the bigger med spas, because I like super shopped all of them, and I know like their sales process, and I know like what they're doing, and I like they're actually pretty sophisticated, and they typically have their together. And so you're right, like when they once they go beyond like a regional med spa, like if they have like one or two or three or four locations, it's like mom and pop. But then once you get above that size, like into the 10, 20, 40, 100, 300 type of locations, you're dealing with a pretty sophisticated operator. And it's typically like a PE backed type of like a roll-up company that buys these guys. And they already have someone like you that's already doing that thing. So yeah, I mean, that's just kind of reality there. It's that you got to just realize you're when you're dealing with a mom and pop, a mom who was like, I want to start a med spa. And then she like started one and got to like $1 million in revenue, and then maybe bought an extra one or started an extra one. These people are not like super, I mean, some of them are, but most of them are just mom and pop. They're happy with their business. It's like it's they're not trying to go and expand to world domination. So with that type of avatar in mind, I just think you're always going to deal with some price sensitivity there. That's where it's like for me, like, and there really is a question of like, is an agency a good business? And it's like, I think, and I was saying this to Jesse and Alan, like, if we were just an agency, I wouldn't do it. It's like, it's just not a good business. It's like, I mean, it's a roadway to make a couple $100,000 a year, but it typically doesn't scale well. It's heavily relied upon like good people. As soon as the people get really, 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 really good, they just leave. And they'll go do something else. And so for me, it's like much more interesting to build something that is like proprietary, like software, or like very deep intellectual property, like deep training. So if you come up with a whole course that you've like recorded and there's hundreds of hours like we have, you can sell that. That's where it becomes interesting. Intellectual property becomes interesting, courses become interesting, software becomes interesting. Yeah, so I think just like standard agency work is it's a great way to get started, and it's a great way to get to know your customers. But for me, I would be looking for you to create a product that I could price more affordably, but then I could sell 1,000 units of, and then I could just make passively. That's generally like how I look at agencies, is they're great as a way to enter into a market, and they suck to scale.
Yeah, I mean, good to know then that we're kind of on the right track, because I was just having this conversation the other day with someone on the team that, like, eventually the goal is to kind of create like a package, the voice AI, to where MedSpot could just plug and play it themselves. And then we'd be able to sell that on a larger scale. It would be lower cost, but it's just easier for them to implement. So it's more like software company instead of just, or
I
we
would
would be.
aggressively go in that direction. Like I would use the current cash flow to pay for that R&D, sorry, research and development. And I would use the current clients as the guinea pigs to test out the software for free or at very low cost. And then I would potentially sell a bunch of those and just completely remove myself from the agency model. Generally speaking, that's where most agency owners go the longer they're in it. It's a very difficult business to be in. It's not fun.
Yeah, because I was even looking at like YouTube in the long run, stuff like that, just like so that the actual work that we're doing isn't so much like I don't even view us as a marketing agency, like ultimately, just because of the voice AI factor in of being software, and then eventually like do start giving content and stuff like that more of a focus. So yeah, I mean, sounds funny, but like the actual work that we're doing wouldn't even be as focused in the agency space. In the near future, like you're saying too, that would just be to really get the ball going, have like tested results, like, hey, we already got like these crazy results for these small med spas that had no reputation really or anything. So if we can work for them, we can work for anybody. So that's kind of.
I'll give you like a secret tip that I think is worth doing is go offer your service for free as long as the person sells the software, buys the software.
Okay.
So just like give away your agency service to get them using the softwares, take an affiliate commission on all softwares, and then have your own software that you charge, say, you know, $1,000 a month on. And if your voice AI stuff actually replaces a person, you could probably justify paying, charging like $1,500 to $2,000 a month. I know other AI SDR type things do charge around $2,500 to $5,000 because they're replacing SDRs. So I don't know how good your stuff is. It would have to be a really good piece of software. It would actually have to work. So if that doesn't happen, then don't even try. And that's a re-listen to that 100 times because that's like where everyone goes, oh, I have this shitty piece of like AI thing that I put together in 3 hours and I'm going to go charge a bunch of money for it. It just doesn't work well. So I would say go get a really good solution that really works and then go charge a premium price for it, like $1,500, $2,000 a month. But the rule is you say, I'm going to set up all your systems for free, but you have to buy the software and subscribe to the softwares. And then make sure you have affiliate links for all of them. Then people will take you on because it's like, it's free. All they have to do is software. And you'll sell a lot more of them. And then you just are selling your whole business model is affiliate commission and selling your own software. That's what I would do. That's what I do. So just so you know.
Yeah, I mean, someone has approached me already to create like an outbound agent and then they're doing all the selling for it. So maybe I'll entertain that offer more seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, good questions. You're asking the right questions. And I think there is just a fundamental, I think agency models suck. And the reason to do them is for product discovery and client discovery and to understand what the need market is. But then you should very quickly be building software or productized solutions to get out of the rat race.
Well, no, generally, I appreciate all the time and insights. Only thing, like, how can I help you? How can I help you grow the community?
Yeah, I mean, invite people. So if you have other entrepreneurs, that's my only ask is just bring more people to the group, share my link, and get people to show up to this call. I mean, my goal is, to have at least 10 people in the next several weeks to join. And so if you can bring two people, that not just like your mother and your sister, but like, you know, people that actually like want to know, you know, what about growing businesses or learning businesses. So, or if you have a list of any contacts of you, like, hey, this guy, like, if you think this guy actually has something to say about B2B entrepreneurship, whether it's scaling or marketing or product positioning or, you know, economics, I've done it so many times, I kind of just know it. So, you know, if you think there's value, I would love for you to just help me promote this free community. It's not, I'm not even asking for money. So.
Like I said, like I was asking you, cause I feel like what do they call that? Law of reciprocity. I can never say that.
Yeah. Yep. Reciprocity.
I was already coming into this call after last week. Like, man, how can I get this out more?
That's it. That's all. I mean, it's help bring more people to the group for free again. And I'm just trying to get more free content. So on the group side, I'm not expecting to sell anything. I'm not going to be putting it behind a paywall. There might be a part in the future that I put in a paywall, but that's not my business model. My business model is to give it all away for free and then to charge for the done for you services and my software. So.
Cool. And yeah, no, like completely candid on my end too. Like I think what sets like the value that you drop compared to other school communities that I hop into too, like hop into calls, like you really understand like the models that go behind like not even just agencies, but like every type of business model. So like just the structure.
I would say every type, but I know a lot about them. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because that's what it's just experience, you know. Again, like I know it because I've tried it and I probably fucked it up. You know, so it's like a lot of people talk from theory from reading books. And for me, like there was a question of like, how do you do market research? And my answer to that is always you do 1,000 phone calls. That's it. Like that's the answer. Go do 1,000 phone calls, be smart enough to listen to people when they're telling you stuff about reality. Use the MOM test to ask a bunch of questions of your ideal customer profile. Know who your ideal customer profile is, and then go call them 1,000 times. Take all that knowledge, record it, put the survey responses into a spreadsheet. Now that you have ChatGPT, analyze all the transcripts and look for a summary of what's going on in the world. And that will give you the best set of information you could possibly have. There's no better information. You're not going to go like subscribe to some blog or subscribe to some community to like give you like a true sense of a market. So for me, it's like I've done that a bunch of times. And I've also read all the books and I've tried most of the courses and I've paid, you know, shit tons of money for mentoring and, you know, and I've blown the $1 million budget on the ads before. Like I've done all that. So this isn't like because I'm like a fucking super genius, is because I've been extremely extremely intense about my unwillingness to give up. And if that's like the number one skill set, that's what I got. It's just like just keep going until you die, you know, and there's no stopping.
Oh, that's cool, man. And definitely shows.
Cool, man. Thank you. Well, again, bring people. That would help. That's what I'm looking for. And I'm not even really promoting the group right now. I'm gonna start promoting it a lot more. But I noticed that in my LinkedIn profile, when I just had rather than book a call with me link, and I just headed to the school group, that was working quite well. And I might just do that. Just change it back over to the school group, because I went to 120 people on the school group in like 2 to 3 days. And then I changed the link out and it stopped, because I wasn't really even, the school group was a side kind of project, not to generate leads, because I generate about 5 to 10 leads just through the LinkedIn link every single week from my organic posts. So I don't know, maybe as we switch back to the school group, just free giveaways type of stuff, it'll be worth it. But I'm also open to feedback of like, what do you think people would pay for? Because I mean, my current offer for people under $1 million, like in your position, is I assume you're doing less than $1 million in revenue. Is that not true? Okay. So then it would be then my offer is $4,500 a month done with you. And so you're kind of getting like a piece of that right now, which is like we get an hourly call. You're getting it every week, so you're getting more benefit than that. But then on top of that, I actually like will do an onboarding. I'll learn about business. I'll look at all the processes. We have a Slack group together where it's just me and the person. And then like we actually answer questions every day. So like you're like, oh my God, look at this. What do you think I should do here? And then I would just respond back. So that's our like done with you coaching. So if there was a sale to a person under $1 million, it would offer done with you coaching like that. But generally speaking, I usually don't take on those types of clients because I'm too busy. But I will if like the person really wants to learn and like they really want to invest in themselves that way. But it's basically like a more intense version of what you're experiencing here. So if you ever were interested in that, that's paid up front 3 months. It's $13,500 for a 3 month period. And you get a live Slack community with me and Alan and Jesse. And if you have questions about low code, all we do is system integrations all day. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, when I'm there, I'll definitely be able to consider more seriously just right now.
Yeah, there's no pressure. I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Bring people to the group. That'd be great. I got to jump. Thank you for spending the time with us. I will see you guys next week, Thursday.
See ya. Appreciate all the values.
All right, see ya. Bye.